I give you James Lorimer MP. Thank you.
I think one of the main reasons I come to these things is because of the stroking my ego gets from Alex's introductions. And a lot of what Francis said about the prospects for South Africa, any good prospects, are underpinned by the massive resource that we have in South Africa, the natural resources. So let's start on that by asking you to picture 1 billion barrels of oil. Billion barrels. Imagine that. Imagine the energy stored within that 1 billion barrels. That amount of energy is equivalent to the 6 trillion cubic feet of gas that we now know to be beneath the soil of Mpumalanga. When trillion cubic feet, let me give you an idea of what that is, another idea. When South Africa built Mosgas in the 1980s, remember that, utilizing shallow offshore deposits of gas south of Mossel Bay, that allowed them to start a gas-to-liquid fuel plant which supplied tens of thousands of barrels of liquid fuel every day for more than 20 years. And that was done on a resource of 1 trillion cubic feet of gas. Under Mpumalanga alone, 6 so far. That find has been found by a relatively small but rapidly growing Australian company called Kinetico and their South African partners. They've drilled a world record, well, they've drilled 44 gas wells, and they've got a world record 44 strikes of gas. And that's mostly in Mpumalanga, but also stretching into the Free State, an area of land that stretches from Secunda in the north to near Newcastle in the south, and they're now drilling near Frieda in the west. And just last week, Kinetico proved their gas-to-power concept with a small generator from a well in the Koran field, which I visited near Amersfoort. It's an exciting thing to stand in the fields of Mpumalanga, just a field full of cows, and see a small wellhead that is blazing, thundering, burning gas coming out that nobody knew was there. The field has been called the Koran after the endangered blue Koran by Nick de Blok, who runs Kinetico and shares my interest in birding. That particular well is one of 5 in less than a square kilometer, and it's been used as a demo for the last 13 years. And in that time, it has flowed on when called to do so. The wellhead pressure has not wavered. People in Kinetico call that well the beast. And being South African, they've connected a gas bri to it. When they drill, Kinetico's holes are only 300 meters deep in the northern part of their acreage and up to 700 meters deep in the south. They're drilling into sandstone and other sediments, and these formations contain large quantities of thermogenic gas, which was cooked by volcanic activity 200 million years ago and trapped there by dolerite rock. Who knew that it was there? It's a globally unique geological feature, and Kinetico is confident that the gas will keep flowing for many years from each well. They reckon that in any individual gas field, it should have a life of between 12 to 30 years, with multi-field production lasting decades more than that. The size of the resource is expanding with every hole that they drill, and it could end up 50, 100, or even more percent of what they know is there. Now, Kinetico is very well placed. They sit in an area of the country surrounded by power stations, coal mines, road and rail links, the Lille gas line, which goes to KZN, and most importantly, a heavy voltage grid with capacity. The recently demonstrated gas to power is only one of the possible uses of Kinetico's product. They could also turn it into liquidized natural gas and supply it to the trucking industry. They sit close to the Lille pipeline, which runs from Secunda to KZN and then down to coastal customers in that province. Those customers are particularly hungry for gas at the moment because they are faced by what people in South Africa are fairly dramatically calling the gas cliff, because Sasol has told them that because its Mozambican gas field is running out, in 2 years' time, it will stop supplying gas to any other customers. So all of a sudden, there's going to be a gas shortage. That's a whole nother another issue. The question is, can Kinetico, sitting right on the doorstep, fill that
that gap? And they say probably not. They won't be on stream in time. They have applied for a production right, and they expect to get it in the middle of next year. And by 2026, Kinetiko expects to have 30 operating wells in the Coron field producing liquidized natural gas, with the potential to expand to 100 wells in its initial major cluster. In 20 years, there could be 1,500 wells or more. The point being, it's a measured ramp up. It's not going to be just somebody turning on a tap, but it's a process that is now underway. Now, of critical importance is the greening effect that gas will have on the energy landscape in South Africa. It's intended to replace the dirtier fuels like diesel, heavy fuel oil, and coal. Gas has the effect of negating the pollution, soot, and ash caused by these energy sources and helping the country to achieve its COP obligations by substantially reducing its carbon output. I mean, if we could convert Eskom overnight to gas from coal, we would immediately meet our Paris obligations. Kinetiko has also submitted an application for a large area to the west of where they've made their finds, and they're convinced that the geology will be uniform. This will add about 60% to their existing geography, and who knows how much to its resource certification. Now, if you follow that belt west, there's an application by Rhino Resources in the northeastern Free State, which stretches down towards the helium-rich Renergen fields around Virginia and Tunisian. Rhino also holds a large right to the northeast of the Kinetiko fields towards the coal mining area of Ermelo. Staying on the subject of known oil resources, we move now to 100 kilometres off the coast of Mossel Bay, where Total discovered gas and condensate estimated to contain another billion barrels of oil equivalent at the Brulpadda and Leopard wells. The Petroleum Agency of South Africa, which licenses oil and gas, reckons that's a 15-year supply. Total have applied for a production right too, which is expected later this year, and they are expecting to make a final investment decision soon after that. So we can expect production from that field in 2027 or 2028. Gas could go into the old Moss Gas liquid fuel plant, which has been standing idle for the last 4 years, or it can go to the nearby Gqeberha diesel peaking plant, which could be converted to run off gas, which would be a lot cheaper. They're also talking about building a new combined cycle gas to power turbine at Mossel Bay. The Petroleum Agency expects major macroeconomic benefits from this development, including an annual contribution to GDP of 22 billion rand, a total government take of 25 billion rand, and about 1,500 direct and 5,000 indirect jobs. The charge is sometimes made that international oil companies will just come and take our resource and leave us with nothing. Well, that's not really true, because the international standard, and this is across more or less across most oil-producing countries, is that host governments, through various public ownership, tax and royalty schemes, take in excess of 50, perhaps even 60% of the barrel of every value of every barrel of oil produced. So that's a lot of money coming into a government fiscus, and ours has large gaps at the moment, which means schools, hospitals, and roads can't be funded properly, and that kind of input into South African fiscus would be most welcome. By saying this, sometimes I've been charged with greedily wanting government to earn more revenues, but I say this from the position of being a small government conservative myself. But I do acknowledge that as a developing country, we have huge financial needs, not least to get over the financial or get out of the financial hole that the current government has got us into. So that's what we know we've got in terms of oil and gas. I find that very exciting. But I'll tell you what makes the oil majors excited, and that's the offshore stuff off the West Coast. They're very excited by Namibia. Namibia is one of the two hottest offshore oil and gas destinations at the moment, the other one being Guyana, which is a few years in advance of Namibia. And that has seen massive GDP growth since it came online. So Total and Shell, what are called super majors, now the super majors are the biggest of the oil companies with the capability of drilling these extremely complicated wells very far out to sea, very deep under the water and rock. They have sunk multiple successful oil and gas wells. When they announced their Venus and Graaf discoveries, Namibia became one of the frontiers of oil exploration. Recently, they've been joined by the Portuguese company Galp. Galp's Mopani find is as big as the others, but has the advantage of lying closer inshore, so it's shallower, easier, less expensive to take out. So consider the technical difficulties of this. Some of these wells, Graf and Venus, lie between 180 and 200 kilometers offshore in up to 2 kilometers of water, and then there's more than a kilometer of rock that you have to drill through beneath that to get to these finds. It's an expensive operation. When I talked before about each well costing R500 million, an oil company person scoffed at me and said, it's probably three times that, R1.5 billion for one well. And the industry standard is that you generally drill one of those wells and you hit a strike, maybe 1 in 10. Off Namibia, they've got 9 out of 11 so far. The people who provide credible assessments for the markets reckon there's about 8 billion barrels of recoverable oil and perhaps 50 trillion cubic feet of gas off Namibia. The oil produced from those wells will be put straight onto tankers, it won't even reach shore, and sailed around to the appropriate refineries around the world, best suited for that grade of oil concerned. Some of the gas will also be liquidized, either at an onshore plant, or it will be put into the most logical use, which is gas to power. So you may find large gas to power stations in the not too distant future in southern Namibia, not for use not only in Namibia, but also in energy-starved South Africa. It's expected the first commercial oil will flow from these wells in 2030, 6 years from now. And the revenue from this will transform Namibia. In 10 years from now, the income of the Namibian government is expected to double. Another prediction is that Namibia will be earning more or less the same from its oil and gas endowment as does Norway. Why then are the South Africans getting excited about these oil and gas finds? Well, the answer is, as Alec mentioned, they're located in part of the Orange Basin, which is an offshore geological feature that stretches from Namibia right down to south of Cape Town. And the geological features in the northern half of the basin are very similar to those that pertain in the rest of it. So there is a belief that similar finds could well be made in South African territorial waters. And in fact, because of an anomaly of the way the Orange River runs into the Atlantic Ocean at a 45-degree angle, the closest land to the Venus and Graaf discoveries are actually straight east to South African territory. One oil man said to me that South Africa's geology is even more promising than Namibia's. But he said the South African government's delays in getting its act together and passing the requisite laws meant that they got frustrated and moved to Namibia to start there instead. So more on that government in a moment. There's one other area of potential that I just need to mention, and that is deep-level shales under the Karoo. 10 years ago, there was excitement over South Africa's shale gas potential that petered out in the face of opposition from environmentalists and a shambolic attempt by government to change the laws that governed oil and gas extraction. Government imposed a moratorium that allowed the state to conduct what it called research on the baseline geology in the potential areas of shale in the Western, Eastern, and Northern Cape, and it allowed for the evaluation of the resource and, in its words, to develop regulations to safeguard the environment. So the government's Council on Geoscience has drilled a number of boreholes around Beaufort West, which is one of the hottest areas for shale gas potential. One of those boreholes is 2.5 kilometers deep. They say they've found gas in commercially viable quantities, and reckon there's around 8 trillion cubic feet of gas in the immediate environs of Beaufort West alone. In the whole of the Karoo, the Council for Geoscience reckons there's an excess of 200 trillion cubic feet of gas. Now, they don't know yet exactly how that gas is held. It hasn't been examined up close by a commercial gas drilling company that can see how tightly it's held, how difficult it is to get out. But that is the potential, anyway, of a lot of gas. It would take 7 years from go-ahead for a fracking company to actually get gas out in commercial quantities. So fracking has now been rather pushed to the background by, first of all, the large quantities of oil and gas promised off the coast and the much smaller, much cheaper, more available gases in Mpumalanga. One of the possible advantages, though, of the delay in fracking is that it's given fracking an extra 10 years of operation in the United States, which is where most of it happens, and they've been able to establish a safety record. So what's stopping South Africa, which has the resources, perhaps in great quantity, from going gangbusters and extracting them as fast as possible? Well, a couple of things. One of them, of course, is government. And the other one is the Greens, sometimes working in tandem. This year, Parliament passed the new Upstream Petroleum Bill that provided some certainty as to how government would regulate oil and gas drilling. It's not a great piece of legislation. We opposed it on two grounds, really. One, that there are racial set-asides in it, which we don't agree with. And the other one is that there is still a lot of latitude given to the minister to make decisions. And that's never very healthy to create a climate for investment. Oil and gas companies aren't too thrilled about the legislation, but they do think that it is within their parameters and they are pressing ahead. And there is more drilling planned to look for discoveries off the West Coast. Another problem is Big Green South Africa, which is a number of very active anti-development environmentalist groups, which are often funded by money from abroad. They aggressively target any new oil and gas development and are given quite a lot of latitude by the law to stop or slow down problems, to projects. The problem being that what can happen is that it just becomes too difficult and too expensive for large oil companies and they exit the scene, taking with them the promise of jobs and revenues. But that doesn't seem to be happening now with Total and Shell and various others. They do seem to be sticking to their guns and going through the legal processes so they are able to investigate these deposits. So I hope that you will agree, having heard all I've said, that with my contention that we have a game-changing resource find on our hands. I said before that the oil and gas endowment that we will likely have will have a similar large economic impact to the major resource finds of the past, stretching from diamonds at Kimberley to the Witwatersrand goldfield, which still incidentally contains the world's largest reserves of gold, through to the Witbank coalfields and the Bushveld complex. Each of those had a massive positive effect on South Africa's economy. South Africa may have been cursed with some spectacular problems, but we've also been blessed with some hugely spectacular resources. And the challenge now is to find a way to extract them in a way that benefits our population and ends the biggest challenge in South African politics, which is to get our people out of poverty.